So anyway, I wanted to at least start, we're back in the book of Ruth, but before we get started, I want to say that many of my children enjoy something called a riddle. And several of them are quite clever at solving them. So I want to start our time this morning with a riddle, okay? I know it's a little hot, a little muggy, but the riddle is not too challenging to solve, okay? So the riddle goes like this. What is something that's all about us, but we can't see it? What is something that we can capture, but we can't hold it? What is something that's all about us, but we can't see it? What is something we can capture, but we cannot hold it? The answer is, next slide, the wind. The wind is one of those things we cannot see, but we can see it in action. It's all around us, and we can see how it affects ourselves and others, okay? It affects planes, it affects all the trees, as you see. But what I'm bringing your attention to is God. God is often seen like the wind in that we can't see him with our eyes, but we can see him in action. Like we did last week in the Old Testament story of the life of Ruth. God is also like the wind in that he is all around us, and we can see he's at work in our lives and the lives of other those people in our lives. So we're continuing our series from the Old Testament, Book of Ruth, where we see how Ruth commits her life to God and how God cares deeply for her by supplying her basic needs for life and community. This week, as we turn the page from chapter 1 to chapter 2, we're going to continue to see God and his invisible providence in the life of Ruth. In chapter 1, it was in her life and the life of her mother-in-law, Naomi. This week, we're going to add a new person to the story, and his name is Boaz. And we're going to see how all three of their lives have intertwined through the providence of God. We're going to see today how God arranges the place and the timing of Ruth's life and different things that are going on to care for her and provide for her. And through this whole series, the next 2 weeks, we're going to discover more hope. Hope in our lives as we learn from her example. Her story encourages us not to lose hope when it seems like things in our lives are turning out in unexpected, sad ways. Her story encourages us to deepen our trust in God and his goodness to us in the things that we see him do, and just like the wind, sometimes in things we don't see. That he's orchestrating all those things around us, both now and for our future. I was encouraged by several of you came up to me last week about some of the feedback you gave me, how this message strengthened you in your faith through the hardships that you're going through. Tom was one of those people. And I want to just look forward to what he's going to do today and through the rest of the series. So I want to just turn back to chapter 1 for a second so we have our context. We were introduced to Ruth and her mother-in-law and Naomi. They both had lost their husbands. And then shortly after the death of her husband, Ruth, her mother-in-law said, look, why don't you go back to Moab? Why don't you stay here in Moab with your family? And she decided not to. Instead, Ruth committed herself to becoming a follower of the God of Israel and to be responsible for caring for her mother-in-law. That's a big task for anyone. So the big idea for today, though, the big idea last week was in our painful life circumstances, we have an opportunity to see God at work. We can be encouraged to say, I still follow, which what Ruth did last week. We see how God redeems those circumstances for his purposes, and then we see that God has sometimes a bigger plan than maybe we thought about. And sometimes he reveals that to us, and sometimes we just have to wait and see. So our big idea for today, though, is that God is at work in all of our lives. We will be encouraged to have more God sightings in our lives and to trust him more in his invisible providence for our future. So if you could turn with me, it's a long chapter, just like last week. We're going to read it all the way through, and then we'll look at it in sections, and then we'll see how we apply it to our lives. So if you have a Bible or Bible app, turn with me to the book of Ruth in the Old Testament, about halfway through. In chapter 2, where we read, now Naomi had a relative on her husband's side, a man of standing from the clan of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz. And Ruth the Moabite said to Naomi, let me go to the fields and pick up the leftover grain behind anyone whose eyes I find favor. Naomi said to her, go ahead, my daughter. So she went out, entered a field, and began to glean behind the harvesters. As it turned out, that's going to be one of our key phrases here today, she was working in a field belonging to Boaz, who was from the clan of Elimelech. Just then, Boaz arrived from Bethlehem and greeted the harvesters. The Lord be with you. The Lord bless you, they answered back to him. Boaz asked the overseer of his harvesters, who does that young woman belong to? The overseer replied, she is the Moabite who came back from Moab with Naomi. She said, please let me glean and gather among the sheaves from behind the harvesters. She came into the field and has remained there from morning until now. except for a short rest in the shelter. So Boaz said to Ruth, "My daughter, listen to me. Don't go and glean in another field, and don't go away from here. Stay here with the women who work for me. Watch the field where the men are harvesting and follow along the other women after the other women. I have told the men not to lay a hand on you. And whenever you are thirsty, go and get a drink from the water jars the men have filled." At this, she bowed down her face to the ground. She asked him, "Why have I found such favor in your eyes that you would notice me, a foreigner?" Boaz replied, "I've been told all you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband, how you left your father and mother and your homeland and came to live with a people you did not know before. May the Lord repay you for what you have done. May you be richly rewarded by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge. May I continue to find favor in your eyes, my Lord," she said. "You have put me at ease by speaking kindly to your servant, though I do not have the standing of one of your servants." At the mealtime, Boaz said to her, "Come over here, have some bread and dip it in the wine vinegar." And when she sat down with the harvesters, he offered her some roasted grain. She ate all she wanted and had some left over. As she got up to glean, Boaz gave orders to his men, "Let her gather among the sheaves and don't reprimand her. Even pull out some of the stalks from the bundles and leave it there for her to pick up, and don't rebuke her." So Ruth gleaned in the field until evening. Then she threshed the barley she had gathered, and it amounted to about an epheth. She carried it back to town, and her mother-in-law saw how much she had gathered. Ruth also brought out and gave what she had left over, had eaten enough. Her mother-in-law asked her, "Where did you glean today? Where did you go? Where did you work? Blessed is the man who took notice of you." Then Ruth told her mother-in-law about the one at whose place she had been working. "The name of the man I was working today is Boaz," she said. "The Lord bless him," Naomi said to her daughter-in-law. "He has not stopped showing his kindness to the living and the dead." She added, "That man is a close relative of ours. He's one of our guardian redeemers." Then Ruth the Moabite said, "He even said to me, 'Stay with my workers until they finish harvesting all my grain.'" Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, "It will be good for you, my daughter, to go with the women who work for him, because in someone else's field you might be harmed." So Ruth stayed close to the women of Boaz to glean until the barley and wheat harvests were finished, and she lived with her mother-in-law. So, like I said, we're going to walk through this chapter to better understand it and apply it to our lives. We're going to walk through three sections, verses 1 to 3, sections 4 to 7, 8 to 16, and 17 to 23. So we start in verses 1 to 3 where God cares deeply for Ruth. And actually what happened is, if you remember last week, it was kind of a to be continued, right? Like, they came to Bethlehem, they were received there, and then they didn't know what they were going to do for food. That's where we stood. So here, basically, we're now introduced to this man, Boaz, and we learn that he's a relative. So, but how does God care for Ruth in these first couple of verses? And it really comes down to what we would consider some amazing coincidences, how he orchestrates in their lives. Ruth tells her mother-in-law she's going to head out, going to go get some food they need to survive. Since they came back to Bethlehem with nothing, their first need was food. So Naomi backed her in doing that, and we read how Ruth entered a nearby field and began to glean behind the harvesters. And that's that phrase I mentioned a few minutes ago. It says, "as it turned out." So I just want you to think in your life, have you ever had a situation you're like, "Wow, it just turned out this way," or "as it happened," or "I can't believe that it happened." Can you believe that? So that's what we're going to see here. This "as it turned out," the idea here really means, "and so it happened, it just happened to be." In other words, she didn't arrange this. There was no divining rod to lead her to a certain place. There was no light from above that told her to go there. It just happened that it was a nearby field that she went to, and that this is the way that God directed her that day. In fact, I have the privilege of being multilingual, and I like idioms in other languages, and there's a language I'm familiar with called Turkish, and they have this phrase that says, "if the wind happens to blow me your way." So they say that when they maybe will see you again. So here, the wind happened, as we talked about the wind in the beginning, this wind blew Ruth to Boaz's field. So what did she do when she was there in the field? So what she was doing in the field is something called gleaning. And again, gleaning is something that's also this thing that God orchestrated in her life. The first thing is, he orchestrated to this field, and when she was at this field, this gleaning, what it is that God set up a practice in the Old Testament, in the book of Leviticus, chapter 19, verses 9 and 10, where we read about what it is. It says, "When you reap the harvest of your land, do not reap to the very edges of your field or gather the gleanings of your harvest. Do not go over the vineyard a second time or pick the grapes that have fallen. Leave them for the poor and the foreigner. I am the Lord your God." So almost think of it as if a farmer is kind of going over the crops, They leave the edges, okay? And then likewise in the vineyard, when they go and they take off the grapes, they leave the ones that fall. Now the edges are the ones that people who are not from that area would feel more comfortable coming. You're not going to come in the middle of a field that doesn't belong to you, but you're happy to maybe come along the edges. So this gleaning is God's care. He was the one who put this out there for the widows and the orphans. They knew in Israel that they could go to any field if they were widows, since they were able to farm themselves, and go along these edges and find things. And sometimes harvesters who were generous or kind would additionally put some stalks over there for them to go through. So again, the direction to the Boaz's field, the gleaning process, are the two things that God had orchestrated when Naomi and Ruth came back to Bethlehem, that there would be provision for them. And this just shows God's heart for orphans, widows, and foreigners, which we see Ruth was two out of those three. Ruth was a widow and a foreigner. And the Old Testament, the book of Deuteronomy, we see in chapter 10, verse 18, God describes himself. He says, "He," meaning God, "defends the cause of the fatherless and the widow, and loves the foreigner residing among you, giving them" what? "Food and clothing." So God's always had a heart for people who are disadvantaged, under-resourced, and particularly those who are widows or foreigners. Now we turn to verses 4 through 7, where we see Boaz, and we get introduced to him. In verse 4, we get a quick glimpse of his character. We see him as someone who acknowledges God, and who, as God has provided this kind of, he was successful. He was a successful farmer. And then in verses 5 through 8, we see that Boaz notices Ruth, and he asks about her. And he asks the workers about her. He's like, "Who is that person over there? Who is this new person, this new woman gleaning in my field?" And what I just want to highlight, that what the workers, the head of the workers, described two attributes of Ruth that I want to highlight to us. One is that she was humble. They share with Boaz how she knew her place in their country and their culture. She knew she was a widow, and she knew she was a foreigner. She knew that she didn't really belong. So what did she do? She asked them, "Can I please, please glean in your field?" C.S. Lewis describes humility this way. I really like it. He says, "True humility is not thinking less of yourself. It's thinking of yourself less." So Ruth was focused on doing what she would best to serve her and Naomi for their needs. Now, the other one is that she was hardworking. They remarked to Boaz about her strong work ethic, how she said that she was heads down from the beginning of the day to the end with a small little break in the middle. She was a hard worker. So she had a strong work ethic and she was humble. And Proverbs 12:11 talks about this idea of a strong work ethic. It says, "Those who work the land will have abundant food, but those who chase fantasies will have no sense." So God was providing for Ruth in this section, but he also had an important role for her to play, because she had to be both humble and hardworking to receive what he had in store for her. Now we turn to verses 8 through 16, where we learn about Boaz's faith and his character. So Boaz approaches Ruth and explains to her how he's going to provide for her and protect her. And he gave special instructions. You might have noticed in the text that we read, all the different things he told the workers to do. He said, go with the other women and be able to do what they do, those who work for him. He said to be able to have the privileges that they have. And one of the privileges was to take the grain that they do, harvest like they do, have access to we call it the water cooler area, the break areas, and to the water that they had. He even had some of the workers pull out stalks for her and leave them behind. She was now included. She was one of them. I don't know if anybody started a new job before, and you know that kind of the first kind of couple months you're there, and you're trying to find your place, maybe somebody who you want, maybe new at school, or have a new lunch period, and you try to find if you can fit in, if you can be included, have somebody to eat lunch with, somebody who takes an interest in you. So not only was she allowed to, as the foreigner, be able to kind of go along the edges, she was now invited to the middle. And so she was part of them. And this was part of God's provision for them, not just provide food, but a place where she could belong, a place where she could be safe. So this was despite her being a widow and a foreigner. Now we see how Ruth was confounded by this generosity, even asked Boaz, why was he showing such favor on her? He explained to her that he had learned about her. So I want to ask a question. Those of you who maybe, when you first get to know somebody in a relationship, you're very curious about them, right? You want to know all kinds of things about that person. And so what I would say is Boaz was such a person. He did his due diligence. He checked around. He might have checked out her Facebook page. He might have checked out her social media. He might have asked some friends in the neighborhood. One of my daughters had the privilege of getting a job with the federal government at the TSA down at the airport. She's working here this morning. And what they do is they interview people. So they interview our family, they interview the neighbors, they interview, they find out a lot about you because they need to know if you're a safe person or not. And Boaz did this. He did all kinds of homework about Ruth. He learned about where she came from. He learned about her first husband, how he passed away. He learned about how she could have stayed with her parents, but she chose not to. He learned about how he was caring for this widow, who also was her mother-in-law. In fact, you might remember last week when the mother-in-law came back, she said, "Don't call me Naomi, call me bitter," so he could even think about, oh, you're caring for Naomi, God help you, you know, if you're doing Naomi. So, like, he understood just how astounding this was. And so he remarks to her that he's been told about everything. And he wants her to be rewarded, he says, that the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge. And that's just an imagery I want you to think about. In the Old Testament, there's several times where God talks about keeping people under the shadow or the refuge of his wings. So in Psalm 17:8, we see the same idea where it says, "Keep me as the apple of the eye, hide me in the shadow of your wings." Just want to think in your life, where is that safe place you can go? Where is that place where you can go and feel protected and cared for? Is there a place that you can go? And what you see here is that Ruth not only came to follow this God of Naomi, but began to experience him as her refuge. She learned about the faith of Boaz and his God and Naomi's God. So now we see that Ruth comes home in verses 17 through 23, the end of the chapter, and she begins to talk to Naomi about all that had happened. So I want you to think about them right at this point in time. What in the world is going on? And we get to see the first question is, she says, "Where were you going?" Well, even before that, she comes back. You see that bag? Bag is really not indicative, okay? That bag is probably about one-third the size of actually what it'd be. This epeth is about 30 pounds. So if you think about like almost like a bag of salt that you put in a salt water softener, that's how much grain she's carrying. It's about 30 pounds. And so it reminds me, before we go there, of, I don't know, how many people go out and do trick-or-treating? Do we have any trick-or-treaters out here? Okay, we at our house, we take trick-or-treating very seriously. And so we will call it the Halloween haul. So this is a picture that's kind of indicative of what it looks like at our house on the one table. Now the kids go around the neighborhood. We actually have them do multiple loops. They go loop one, and then they come back and empty out their bag. And then they do loop two, and then they empty out their bag again. And some of them even do loop three. It really depends. And we know in our neighborhood who has the big candies. You know those houses that you want to make sure you go to? So here's what's happening. Naomi is just seeing this, like, think of it as a bigger than a Halloween, 30 pounds of grain, like enough to feed them for roughly about almost a year. So she comes home with a year's worth of provision when she went out in the day and they didn't even know where the next meal was going to come from. That's what happened. So Naomi says, "Where did you go? What did you do?" And then she asks, "How did they treat you?" And think back to Boaz's words, "I want you to be safe. I don't want you to go anywhere else. I want you to stay here, be with the women who work in my field." So she began to tell this story. Now, I don't know if you know, but we're going to ask the question. Does anybody know how many, and this is not a gender slam, it's just a curiosity, how many words in a day that the average woman uses? I'll give you three choices. Is it 5,000, is it 10,000, or is it 20,000? How many people think it's 5,000? How many people think it's 10,000? How many people think it's 20,000? It is 20,000. So what I want you to think is, now, Ruth, at this point in time, she's probably going to use 30,000 to 40,000 words to describe her day. Sometimes, that's just an average, 20,000. Think of all the words, like all the questions that Naomi's asking. Wait a second, you were at Boaz's field? And what happened there? And you were gleaning, and they let you inside? Why did they let you? How did they? Like, you could just imagine. So how many of you have friends who are very curious? Do we have any curious friends who want a lot of details of what's going on in your life? Yes, we have those friends, okay? This is Naomi, classic Jewish mother-in-law, right? Tell me everything. Don't leave anything out, right? So that's what's going on. And you can just imagine her, Ruth, saying, "But there's more, even more for me to tell you. Boaz, which Boaz? That Boaz? This field?" And finally we get to the end where there's this aha moment for Naomi, and she's like, "Oh my goodness. Boaz, he's one of our guardian redeemers." Now, this is a Hebrew word, and it's a legal term of who is somebody who has the obligation to redeem a relative in a very serious, difficult situation. As for the specifics of that, it's in Leviticus chapter 25. I recommend you read that on your own throughout the week. It's very exciting. But in short, in the case of an Israelite man's death, in which he fails to leave behind a son, remember, both Naomi didn't have a son and Ruth didn't have a son, the brother of a deceased man is commanded to take the widow as the wife and redeem the land and provide all these other things. That's going to be a little bit of a movie preview. Remember how last week we said to be continued? This is our to be continued. Guess what might happen? So it didn't happen yet, so don't read ahead. Those of you who know the story. But this is Boaz's alleged position as indicated by Naomi. And we'll see how all that plays out. So again, we have at the beginning, Ruth kind of is cared for in the field. We then have basically Boaz figures out who Ruth is. Ruth figures out who Boaz is. And then Naomi figures out, oh my goodness, Ruth and Boaz and all these wonderful things are happening. That's where we're at. So what does this mean to us? It's an Old Testament story about an interesting, you know, woman who takes care of her mother. What does this all mean to us? So I just want to first to say that many of you are still discovering what faith is all about. And we want you to pause and reflect on the circumstances God has been orchestrating your life so far to reveal himself to you and even to bring you here this morning. There is a God, he is real, and he rewards those who earnestly seek him. So if you're searching and you're just trying to discover what this faith is all about, our heart's prayer is that you would recognize that God is present and active in your life at this time. And he's sovereignly working in your life to draw you closer to him. And may today maybe be that day that you seek to follow him and walk in his ways. So we ask that you see God at work in your life. In my own journey, I had the privilege when I was a teenager of being exposed to a man named John Character. And he took an interest in me, and there was a group of young adults at a group called Student Life. And I came to a place very similar to our church where they began to talk about God and to be able to explain it, what it meant to have a relationship with him and the things that Jesus had done for me. And I began to just journey with them, and eventually that began the part of my own spiritual journey. So I'm very grateful for the orchestration that God had intersecting my life with John's, just like Ruth and Boaz and Naomi and Boaz and Naomi and Ruth and Boaz. And that's what God does. He brings people into your life at different seasons of your life to reveal who he is. In Ephesians chapter 1, verse 11, it says, "In him we were also chosen, having been predestined according to the plan of him who works out everything in conformity with the purpose of his will." And what that means is God has a plan for your life. And it's unfolding day by day. And we don't know what tomorrow will hold, but I knew though that God holds your tomorrow. And think through Ruth chapter 2 and all God was doing behind the scenes to draw Ruth closer to him. Maybe Boaz was in Bethlehem and when he was there, well, obviously we wouldn't say his car broke down, but maybe his transportation didn't allow him to come back to the field. Or maybe that day he got sick and couldn't come to the field. Maybe Ruth is directed to a different field, nobody connected. Like, as you begin to think through all these circumstances that God had to orchestrate to bring this story together, you're just blown away. So I want you to think about that. Think about all these things that God had to orchestrate in their lives and how he's orchestrating things together in yours. Now, for those of us who are already decided to follow Jesus and are walking with him every day, how do we apply this second chapter of Ruth? The first, I want to really draw back to VBS. So our VBSs, for many, many years, have had this expression, God sightings. You all remember the word God sightings? So those of us who've been part of VBS? So I want to encourage you to look for God sightings. Now, God sightings are actually what we call everyday clues that God is present in our lives. I mentioned my kids like riddles. Okay, my kids also love to play games where we figure things out. Okay, so is it Professor Plum, right, with the rope in the library, right? That's the original clue game. But there's so many games that there are clues that give you what's happening. So as we think about these VBSs over the years, we used to give out the kids wristbands sometimes that would say your God sightings. So I'm not here to, my one son has, I don't know, how many wristbands you got, Josiah? A lot of wristbands. So you can go and look at Josiah's wristbands after the service if you like, but maybe you need a wristband. Maybe you need, I have a ring that has a cross on it. Maybe you have a necklace. Maybe you have something that just helps you to remember that God is at work in your life and be able to look for him. So over the years, I've been a crew leader for maybe 15 different crews I was counting. And during the time we come, usually over snack, we come together and we say, okay, did anybody have a God sighting today? And I can tell you, it's amazing among these elementary school kids how many of them begin to see God at work in their lives. So if elementary school kids can see God at work in their lives, so can middle school kids. So can high school kids. So can adults, young adults, unmarried, married, parents, grandparents. The reality is that we can all look for God sightings because God's present in our lives. And he's active and doing things. And we're encouraged in Psalm. Well, let me tell you about one other story. So in your family, I don't know what you do God sightings, but there was a season in our family we decided to come up with this thing that we would do at the dinner table called blessings and bummers. Okay, and that's when we come to the dinner table and we would take turns. It wasn't always easy. Remember, people have a lot of words they need to get on a day. People have less words they need to get on the day. They all come together at the dinner table. And we take turns and we'd share one way that God was at work in our lives, giving us something for which we were grateful. That was the blessing. And then we'd share one other way that God was allowing hard things to happen in our lives so we could trust Him more. That was the bummer. So then we'd go around, and sometimes we'd never finish, right? We'd get to the first person, and they would take up more of the time than someone else. And then that person would go the next time, we'd start first. But blessings and bummers, maybe this is something that you take up in your house. Maybe you call it something different. Maybe you call it a God sighting. But whatever it is, it's about taking time intentionally to see God at work and to call it out. We read in Psalm 34, verse 8, it says, "Taste and see that the Lord is good. Blessed is the one who takes refuge in Him." That's the whole idea, tasting, see God, see Him at work. And then this whole idea of refuge is underneath the wings. How is He caring for you? God wants us to see how much there is no such thing as a coincidence with Him. So I want to tell you a weird story. It's a true story, apparently, from the 1930s. In Time magazine, there was a man named Joseph Biglock. Okay? Now, Joseph was a street cleaner in the city of Detroit. In October of 1937, while he was cleaning an alley, a baby plopped out from the fourth-story window, struck him on the head and shoulders, injured him, but the baby ended up doing just fine. Exactly 1 year to the day later, Joseph was sweeping up another alley in the city of Detroit. Two-year-old David Thompson fell from a different four-story window, landed on him with the exact same results. True story? Yes. Coincidence? No. God used Joseph to save the lives of two different young children. This was not a coincidence, but God's silent orchestration put in Joseph in a place at a time to be used by Him. Ruth in Boaz's field. Boaz comes back from Bethlehem. Coincidence? No. This is what God does. He puts people in places to be used by Him. God wants us to understand that sometimes that He is always up to something. He's doing lots of things in our lives. Some of them we see, and some of them, like the wind, we don't see. But we see the effect. And let's be fair, at times we may feel that He's distant to us, that He's far away. But the truth is, He says that I am an ever-present help in times of trouble. Other times we may wonder if He really even cares about us. But the truth is, He tells us that He is working all things together for our good. At times we may feel that God's too busy or too great to notice us. But the truth is that God is not too distant to know the details of our lives. He knows them all down. He even describes that He knows the number of hairs on your head. Let's ask the question. Does anybody know how many hairs are on the average head? Is it 20,000, 50,000, or 100,000? How many people say 20,000? 20,000 hairs. 50,000. This is an average head. Some of you are a little less. We're not pointing that out right now. How many? 100,000. 100,000 hairs on the average head. And God knows every one of them. Every one of them. And why does He use that hairs on your head? Because He wants to know that He knows all the details. He wants to hear all 20,000 words. Right? He wants to hear everything and know everything because He's at work in all those parts of our lives. So for those of us who have already decided to follow Jesus and are walking with Him, in addition to looking for those guide sightings, how else can we apply this second chapter of Ruth to our lives? We can trust in God's providence. Now, providence is a big word, but it really refers to kind of God's timing and His provision. So when we talk about timing, we also talk about like, oh my goodness, that happened just in time or right in time, or oh my goodness, that could have, to think about those circumstances in your life, that could have been a near miss on an accident. It could have been a medical test that showed something at the right time. And really, we talk about that beautiful picture of things, His guidance to us when we're looking to know what to do next. As for provision, we could call it something what we need when we need it. So the providence of God is trusting His timing to give us what we need when we need it. That's hard. It's hard. I'll give you an example from my own life. It's a little extreme, but work with me here. I've shared on a few occasions that at one point in time I had a heart attack. I had sudden cardiac death. They used an AED to brought me back. That's something I don't want anybody to experience, God forbid. But what happened is because of that heart attack, I had to then see a cardiologist on a regular basis. My cardiologist, after I saw him a couple of times, maybe about, I guess, a year later, a little over a year later, he said to me, "Hey, I think I see something in your neck." He said, "I'm not an endocrinologist, but I think you should go see an endocrinologist." And because I had that heart attack, and he saw something in my neck, and he happened to go to med school with the top endocrinologist at Penn, and how many knows how hard it is to get a specialist appointment these days? We'll see you in 6 months later, right? A couple days later, I'm down at Penn visiting the top endocrinologist at Penn. She does some tests, and then she finds out that I have a tumor in my neck. Turns out that that tumor, they do a needle biopsy on it, and then they say, "It's wonderful, it's benign. Great, we'll just keep an eye on it." So I was so excited about that, right? But unfortunately, what happens is then during the period of time I get it checked, I'm not comfortable about it. And then over time, I said, "Look, I really want to get this thing out." It was during COVID, they didn't want to do surgery. So I really pushed on the surgeon. I said, "Look, I really want to do it." So we did it, and it turns out it was cancer. And that 1 in 10,000 needle biopsies happens to be erroneous. But if I didn't have my heart attack, and if I didn't have a cardiologist know the endocrinologist, and the endocrinologist didn't know a really good surgeon, and I didn't do it. So all these things God has to orchestrate. And they were able to take out my cancer. I was able to get radiation and treatment, and now I'm a cancer survivor, and I'm a heart attack survivor. And as I mentioned last week, I could either be the luckiest or unluckiest person you know if you believe in luck, which I don't. There is no such thing. It's just God's providence. So how do we do this? What do we do? God says in Psalm 34:9, he reminds us of all the things I was just sharing. He says, "Fear the Lord, you holy people, for those who fear him lack nothing." I lack nothing. So how does God's providence appear in Ruth's life? Think about all these things he orchestrated to bring her together with Boaz. And I want you to think about a time in your life where you've seen God's providence really come true. Because the reality is that the providence of God is not always the outcome we were hoping for. It's not always the answer to our prayers. However, it is in the deepness of the closeness with God and the care of God that we can experience hardships and really feel close to him. For those of us who've already decided to follow Jesus and walk in with him, we acknowledge that there are no coincidences, but we sometimes experience the sweetness of God in the bitterness of life. Have anybody experienced the sweetness of God in the bitterness of life? I have. There's been times where prayers I had weren't answered and people die. There's been times I've had people are sick and they don't get better. There's been times I've had where relationships aren't healed and people divorce, where kids drift, where things are hard. So I don't want to end with just, you know, unicorns and rainbows here. It's really hard. Life is really hard. But God is very real in those hardships. So we saw that in week one. We saw this. So what I want to do now is I just want to bring us back to another riddle, okay? I want to end with one more riddle. What is colorful and tubular by the runway's edge? What's something that's a flying guide for the pilot's pledge? What's something that's colorful and tubular by the runway's edge? Something that's a flying guide for the pilot's pledge. It is a windsock. Oops, one more. Windsock, there we go. So what does a windsock do? Now, a windsock is this conical-shaped tube made of woven tile designed to indicate both the direction and speed of the wind. Okay? It serves a lot of purposes for different industries. The primary objective is to provide quick indications to people regarding the direction and intensity of the wind, but it's most commonly used on runways and helipads at airports. It lets pilots know right away the conditions before they take off. They're also used on roads and bridges where crosswinds pose a danger. They inform about traffic, wind conditions. It allows drivers to adjust their driving style accordingly. So it gives us a clue of what's happening. What's happening. And so what I want us to be is I want us to be a windsock and keep an eye on what God is doing and the direction that he is moving. That we be keen observers at God at work, seeing which direction he's moving, what speed he's using, what intensity he's using in our lives and the lives of others. So you can be aware and take a look. Let's keep an eye out for what's happening and be windsocks for God. So the big idea for our message today in chapter 2 was that God is at work. Whether you know it or not, whether you see it or not, whether you believe it or not, he's at work in your life. And through Ruth's example, we've been able to see that God, these God sightings in her life and Naomi's life, and through her example, we can trust God about his invisible providence for our future. Let's pray. Heavenly Father, we thank you for the encouragement we've received from Ruth's story in chapter 2. We're encouraged to see you at work in our lives and the lives of others around us. Help us to be less self-absorbed and more aware of how you are at work. Help us to be encouraged in how you provide for our needs and the needs of others that we know. Help us to worry less and trust you more and trust in your providence for our needs, to have what we need when we need it. In your name, amen.